Hello, this is Jay Nimmer. You're listening to Life Autistic. This is episode number 722. And this is all about... This is my... A libertarian's request of Barack Obama. Now, there's one thing you can say about Barack Obama is that he doesn't seem very interested in individual liberty, particularly. Or he doesn't seem to be. So everybody's accusing him, well, he's all about the redistribution of wealth. And you go, you know, I don't know. I know he said that sometime in the past, but that was way in the past. I don't know if he's changed his mind. I don't know. We don't know much about Barack. You know, I said, oh, he's such a great orator. And you go, frankly, I don't see it. I don't see it. I'm not very impressed. And it's not because, well, you're just a Republican. You're going to hate everything Barack Obama. I said, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Republican. I don't like either one of them. You can't call me very partisan because it's partisan toward whom? I'm only partisan toward the Constitution, which brings up the whole thing that I would have to say to Barack Obama, which is in a few short weeks, Barack Obama will be sworn in as the 44th president of the United States. And in that swearing in, just like with everybody else who works for the federal government, they swear that they will support and uphold the Constitution. Now, I know those are mere words, that they are meaningless to most of the people that take that oath. I am the kind of person that actually listens to oaths I take, who actually tries to uphold what I say I'm going to do. I know that that's old-fashioned. I know that nobody does that anymore. People are constantly saying, yes, yes, I'll do whatever you say. And that's their basic attitude. Is, yeah, yeah, if I want to be president, I have to say these stupid words. I don't believe a penny of it. The guys for the last 40 years haven't cared a what for it. But just to say, Barack, what do you think of the Constitution? Now, I am a strict constitutionalist. I liked Ron Paul. I like Harry Brown more. But I'm all for the Constitution. I think it was an inspired document. And when we walk away from the words of the Constitution, the spirit that brought it into being, the fact that you see tyranny and you try to do something to free individuals from tyranny, that was what we were trying to do. That was what the whole idea of it was. That was what founded this country. The fact that we've walked away from it, I think, is a slap in the face to the founding fathers. As we run headlong to trying to be just like the Europeans, it's like, what do we bother revolting against? Why did the founding fathers bother? Why didn't they just stay, appease the king, get more land for it, and basically make themselves richer? Why did they sacrifice, sometimes at great personal cost? Why did they bother? Because look at what we're doing now. We're so intimate with Europe. We've been sleeping in bed with the European mindset for so long, we've become enamored of it. It's like, why do we bother? Why do we bother? Why on earth be American? Why don't you just move someplace else? You know, why don't you just move to Europe? I can tell you there are several European countries now that have very liberal immigration policies. Of course, the problem is the people who really love socialism, which are the people who aren't terribly productive, you know, who says, I'm a street cleaner, I don't do a very good job as a street cleaner, but I'm a street cleaner, and I think the only fair thing is that I get paid as much as the corporate CEO down the, you know, in the big house down the street. I should have a big house like that. And you go, well, what are you going to do to make that happen? Oh, I'm going to tell the government to steal all their money. That's what I'm going to do. And it's like, oh, well, just marvelous. Glad to hear it. What kind of sensibility is that? I think this was the main street. Is that the, that's the post office? 101 South Apple. There's the community center. Here I am in wonderful House, New Mexico. I've looked at House, New Mexico on occasion for the possibility of turning of moving here. And it's got lots of possibilities, honestly, you know. It's got lots of older houses that have either been abandoned or just aren't here anymore. Much smaller town than it used to be. And it's like, you know, why don't we take advantage of this? Why don't we... Anyway, so... I have to look every now and then. I'm on the main street of town. It's mostly unpaved. This used to be the main street in town because this is where you see all the businesses. You know? It's Apple Street. This is Apple and 5th. Now I'm going down to Apple and 4th, I believe. Yeah. And the big intersection seems to be Apple and 3rd. Which is funny, because here's 107, here's 101 Apple Street, which used to be, it looks like it used to be a residence. No, it used to be a building. Here is, here's the post office. Here's 2nd Street. Church of Christ meets here. I hope not. That doesn't look like the Church of Christ anymore. I think they've either upgraded or gotten out completely. This is the old grocery store. And, anyway. So, and here's the school. It's on Apple Street, too. Okay. Regardless of all this, anyway, I don't really take Barack Obama to task. You know, says, I understand that your predecessors didn't give a flip about the Constitution, didn't give a flip about universal liberty, and about constraining government, because government is the most persistent enemy to freedom. The most persistent enemy to it. You never have a greater enemy of liberty than a government. Because a government can do it and take it, and you have no recourse. You can't go back. You can't sue government, particularly. Government can sue you all at once, but you can't sue government. Most lawsuits, in fact, are the people versus something. And you're going, the people? Well, that's the government. It isn't the people. They just get to use the word, the people. And I know he doesn't, you know, he might pay it some lip service. But he wouldn't care. He wants to right wrongs. He sees the government as the tool to right wrongs. You know, black people have been oppressed. That's a wrong that needs righting. Of course, the way he's going to do it is he's actually going to punish white people, or he's going to give, you know, blacks favoritism, you know, affirmative action. You know, we were actually trying to get rid of that as if it didn't matter anymore. We were trying to make the world colorblind. He's not interested in that particularly. I mean, he talked about that rhetoric when the time came. I don't know what he's going to do ultimately. Because we don't know. Don't know the soul of the man. Have no track record. In fact, he has an anti-record. He doesn't have a record that says anything. His, you know, the only thing that people can really dig up about his voting record is that he voted present more than he voted any other way. I'm here. It was almost like he was setting the stage for being president by not really giving the opposition anything except his inexperience as his calling card. You know, well, he's just so inexperienced. Well, you know, that ended up being an asset for him. Well, he doesn't seem to be affected by big Washington. You go, whoa. He seemed to do pretty well in the Chicago political machine. Yikes. I said, this is not a place where a non-politician thrives. You know, he hasn't had much of a public life. And then everybody cheers it from, you know, because we don't know anything about what this man believes in. For all we know, he is Satan. We don't know. We've gotten so scared, so unhappy, so miserable, or just running to any old thing. You know, I just don't want George Bush anymore. And you go, you're not going to get George Bush. His 8 years is up. George Bush is not coming back. Take him off the table. You know, and the whole thing was, well, John McCain is going to be 4 more years of Bush. And you go, now how could that be true? He was in the Bush administration. He never really voted with Bush. He was the guy that most of the Republicans didn't like. He was the most liberal Republican in Congress. Most Republicans didn't like him. He made trouble. Anyway, so. My hope would be that he would listen to that constitutional thing. For all I know, he's a quiet libertarian. That he said what he said to get into office, and when the moment comes, he's going to pull a libertarian on us. And I would be more than happy, but it's frightening. It's frightening, because you just don't know what you're going to get out of this. The Democrats supported him because he won. You know, he sounded like a good socialist to socialists, because they're a significant part of the party. Just as much as ultra-conservatives are a significant part of the Republican Party, they may not be significant in numbers, but they most definitely are significant in providing kind of an ideological an ideological interest, or giving it its ideology, just like that the socialists do too. So he had to pander to the socialists. He might be a libertarian. Who's to know? Although the line of work he got into doesn't seem to go that way, and the whole thing of community action, it tends to be getting money for this thing and for that thing. It tends to be for supporting government action to it seems to be for bigger government, because when you have a bigger government, there's more money for community action to play with. I don't know what kind of community action he got into. He seemed to be a low-level political person that just really started doing well. I frankly think the only way he could have came to power so quickly and so happily was because because he made a pretty good operative, and he took opportunities. That's not what a libertarian tends to do, but, if you're going to get into power in government, that's what you do. You almost have to have libertarians to do that. So you know what? Don't know. Maybe when he says that oath, and when he swears to uphold the Constitution, maybe he'll listen. But, so many other people did what they did to get in there, that you can only think that, he's got so many people to pay back. He has so many people that he needs to, but he might not. Once you're the president, you're there for 4 years at least. Now, if he wants to be the president for 8, he's got to keep up the pretense for at least the next 4 years. If he just wants to use these 4 years to affect as much change as he can, says, and I don't know what the Democrats are going to do. Unless he's in lockstep with Congress, it doesn't get any better. He's still going to have to fight for what he wants to do. Because, congressmen, just because they have a D after their name doesn't mean that they all have the same ideas, that they all are about the same causes. It doesn't mean that at all. It really doesn't. What you find out is that when you get power, and right now the Democratic Party is in power, they have very much solidified their majority in the legislature, the House and the Senate, and now in the White House. But what happens is when you get all that stuff, then you start seeing that they're a fractious group. These are not a united group of people. They all have their own different little things. The only thing that kept the Democratic Party together so far was that, you know, was the fear of the Republicans taking over. That was important. But now they don't feel that so much. You know, there's the whole euphoria that they're just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, but when it comes down to it, what does that matter? Because when it comes down to it, it's about your things. The Democratic Party's always been about special interest groups, really. You know, people always talk about the PACs in the Democratic in the Republican Party. We're talking about special interest groups in the Democratic Party. You know, the environmentalists, welfare folk, this thing and that thing. All these things, all these different groups are going to start vying again for a bigger piece of the pie. Now, Barack Obama courted them by saying that he was going to work on social programs. All those guys are big about social programs, and that's helpful. But now the fight really begins. Is it going to be my social program that gets backed or not? Is it going to be this that gets backed or not? You know, in Barack's rhetoric, he was talking about, not pumping up the deficit. Now, that's just crazy talk. Come on. Of course he's going to pump up the deficit. He can't even begin to do what he promised or what he said that he wanted to do without doing it. Because he said he was going to get rid of programs that weren't working. No Democrat, no socialist gets rid of programs that don't work. Because every program there is has some wonderful purpose. It's a wonderful thing to do. And it really isn't a question of whether they accomplish it or not. What? Because our schools are failing, is he going to get rid of schools? Is he going to cut funding to schools? Oh, no! Oh, no! No, we're going to pump more money into it and try to fix it. You know, that's always the problem, right? We're just not putting enough money into it. Boy, if we just put a little bit more money into the schools, why, everything will get better. And you go, we've been doing that for 40 years, and things have been getting progressively worse. You know, and you go, well, then we got to fix it. And you go, no, we have to figure out that the problem really isn't the schools, particularly. It isn't about a lack of education, perhaps. It's about something else, probably, that's completely different. It has nothing to do with that. You know, wow, it's the downfall of social whatever. And you go, well, you know what? All of our socialism has not produced love. It's produced fighting, bickering children. Of course, you know, politicians don't want to get rid of fighting, bickering children because that's how you pander, is by splitting people into little groups and pitting them off of each other, right? Isn't that how things get done? You have to create fear to get motivation. They said that this election, 60% of the electorate voted, which was amazing. Hasn't been that number since, I guess, 1960, since the 50s. And you know what stirred that up? Fear. It was just fear. It wasn't because people were, you know, there were some people that were just excited about Barack Obama becoming president. There was far less that were excited about John McCain. The votes John McCain got were from party loyalists, of which there are quite a few. I think there's much more party loyalty in the Republican Party than there is in the Democrat Party. And I think one will see that here shortly. Because you'll see the Democratic Party, now that they have, that they feel confident in their power over these next 4 years, you will see them, you know, wrestling amongst themselves for their little piece of the pie. They've all decided that they want a bigger pie, but now it's a question of, well, how big's my piece going to be? You know, what can I bring home to make my constituents happy? My constituents want this and this and this. Barack Obama made a really smart move in the earmark part of things, by number one, not talking about getting rid of earmarks, which was one of John McCain's big things when he was a senator. Still is a senator, actually. That was probably one of the first mistakes we ever made, was that we said standing senators, standing anything, could become a president. They didn't have to give up their office to run for the presidency. I thought that was a bad move. I always thought that was a good thing. That really gets rid of, you know, people who are just blowing it to the wind and saying, I don't care. You know, I can run for the president and I'll still have my cushy Senate job. You know, whatever. So, you know, it's going to get fractious. Whatever unity the Democrat Party, the only unity they have is to keep the Republicans down. But after that, they're going to start fighting for their own little things again. You know, people thought we were past that, and you go, no, it was just a time when everybody was afraid. The stakes, you know, the margins were too close. The Republicans could take it back if one makes a misstep. Now the Democrats don't feel that way anymore. You know, the Republicans got into power . The American people didn't like that very much. You know, we had an American president, a Republican president, pardon me, who seemed to go toward fascism, and America really balked at that. Now they're swinging hard towards socialism, and the problem is, you can sustain socialism. It can be sustained at a certain level. Now, when socialism gets too big, it starts to collapse on itself. Because it depends on the fact that, against all reason, rich people will continue to be rich, in spite of the fact that the majority of their income is being confiscated. You know, smart socialism says, yeah, you give them a high tax rate, it makes everybody feel better, but then you give them tons of loopholes that make them jump through hoops the way you want them to. The only problem is, we did a good job of closing up the loopholes, and I'm not really sure how you open those back up without being obvious. So the problem is, the rich people might not be coming into rich. This was a bad time to turn to socialism. You can only really turn to socialism when you've got a huge pile of money in the bank, or you can print up your own money, which is what the government can do. You have to be able to tap into some wonderful stuff. Socialism only, you know, who was talking about it? Glenn Beck was talking about it just today. He says, we need capitalism to heal the economy so that we can do socialism. And you go, that's funny, because yeah, it's right. Once you have socialism, all the prosperity starts slumping horribly. Socialism does not help the economy at all. you can only have socialism when you have huge amounts of massive wealth, like a country with lots of oil, you know, and it has all their oil stuff put together. Socialism only works when you have that huge bounty of stuff that's readily accessible, that you don't really have to work hard to get. You just have to kind of maintain it. That's what socialism. Socialism is kind of the after your tough, hard people have you know, brought down the buffalo, taken what they wanted, and left the rest behind. That's when socialism comes in like some buzzard or scavenger. Socialism preys on the largesse that comes from something like capitalism. People don't like capitalism. Oh, those rich people, they're always just getting richer. We don't get hardly any of it. And you go, well, you got some. Now, under socialism, they'll take all that stuff from the rich people, and they'll give it to the poor people, but that ends at some point. They can't do that forever. Sometimes, you know, that's only true if this ends up being a zero-sum game, which it isn't. You know, the government will continue to print money, you know, and we'll be back in the same mess we are now. You know, people talk about the financial crisis. They're blaming it on the rich people who are speculating. Well, you know what? The government's speculating too. We just haven't gotten to that one yet. But it's coming. It's coming soon. This whole swing towards socialism is going to take us out. You know, we'll say, oh, well, those oil companies, they really profit off this stuff. We need to confiscate that money from those oil companies. They're just getting sinfully wealthy. And you go, okay, but you can only play that card once. You can only play that card once. Because once you've taken their excess and distributed it to everybody, there's no more excess. Now, you can play with the books and try to generate another thing. Corporations are very good that way. A lot of things are very good that way. You take a look at the conditions around you. You take a look at those conditions and you say, hey, you know, I'll take advantage of this law, and this law, and we'll do stuff like that. The problem is, and this was spelled out in a radio commercial that I've heard a few times. They haven't been playing it lately, but they used to play it quite a bit. I don't know if it was local or if it was a national thing. It was all about, you know, a lady would call a plumber on the phone and say, I need some plumbing work done. He says, well, it's going to cost you this much. And she goes, phew, what? And he says, well, you know, it's all about this and this and this and this and this and this. Nothing to do with the plumbing. And you soon come to find out that guy who had originally started a business to do plumbing didn't even do plumbing anymore. That wasn't his job. His job was to run a business. That's what you soon find out. There's people who do the work, and then there's people who scrape the top off of the profits of the work being done, and that's what their business is. You know, their business is pleasing the government, making sure the taxes get paid, you know. When the government says, oh, you know, all businesses have to provide this level of health care, well, they have to go through trying to meet all the hoops that are being put in their place for this. And at some point, under socialism, that becomes the economy. It isn't that it's actually productive anymore. You're not really doing anything. You're basically, you know, servicing your business, and your business spends most of its time trying to please government so it can retain its license. And that's what we're going to get close to. That's when government falls apart. In LDS doctrine, I don't know if it's Christian in a big way, we know that governments will fall. And I think this is where governments will fall. It's when they so constrain and so regulate everybody's behavior that people stop working. When enough of your people are paid by government to do what government wants them to do instead of doing something that's really productive, well, then what you've got is something that really kind of implodes. We've come close to it. In fact, we are. I think that's what this huge bailout, this $700 billion, and probably a lot more than that, that's just the number that was published. That's what that was all about. It was about telling a bunch of people you don't have to be productive, you don't really have to do a good job, we'll throw money at you just to do basically what you've always been doing, but you have to accept our oversight. You're going to have to spend money to please us. You're going to have to hire new people to make sure that the new regulations we're giving to you get done. And the problem is that that's not sustainable long term at all. It feels really great short term, you know, especially for the person that gets that job. I do government regulation compliance at such and such a bank. Well, that's a new job, boy, and they'll pay you pretty good because, you know, this is something the bank's never done before. They don't want to get into trouble, so they get somebody who they think they can do it, and they're going to pay them pretty good. The government may even mandate that you have a position like that, and mandate how much money that person gets paid. They don't tend to, but they could, especially given how things are going. Anyway, so. I talked only a little bit about what Barack Obama should do in relation to the Constitution. You know, I'm not saying anything new that I haven't said before. You know, you should probably support and defend the Constitution. Uphold and defend. Says nobody's interested in that particularly. I know no president that has given even the barest lip service to the Constitution. They constantly find ways to get around it, try to subvert it anytime they can. George W. Bush, with the Patriot Act, did an excellent job of coming up with a way to just say, hey, we're at war, we just have to kind of suspend all that constitutional garbage. And you go, and the most important thing is now you don't even have to have a war. He can declare a state of emergency, and the Constitution just ceases to exist. I find it interesting that in the Constitution, they didn't put a little thing in there that says you can suspend the Constitution in a time of emergency. It's not there. Because they said more evil came from that. You could manufacture an emergency, seize power, and then never choose to give it back. That's kind of what everything was kind of working toward, was that whole operation. You know, someday we can just have that. It'd be great. You know, it would be nice to remind these politicians what America really is about. It's sad to say that Ron Paul's probably the only person who even thinks about it. Everybody else is worried about getting in office, staying in office, you know, doing whatever it takes to get their constituency to do it, mostly catering to large donors who provide the money needed to keep these things going. Anyway, I'm nearly to the end of my journey here, and tired of talking, strangely enough. I'm going to go here in about a week to go try and get my amateur radio license. I'm going to try to go for all three. I'm going to take all three elements and see how it goes. See how many of them I can pass. I'd love to pass all three and get my extra. This is opened up by the chance that that Morse code is no longer something that needs to you need to learn before you get an amateur radio license. And it's really marvelous for a guy like me, for the simple reason that, you know, I really struggle with Morse code. You know, not that I've tried particularly. But I have. I've struggled with it. Someday I hope to do better on that. Anyway, so, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to Life Autistic. This is episode number 722. And, well, gee whiz. Have a great day.